I am firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase studio on a very wet Michigan Avenue. Oh, my goodness, the rain has been coming all weekend. How horrifying is that? But you know what they say, we should have a lot of Mayflowers, and judging by the beautiful tulips on Michigan Avenue, that might be the case. But that's neither here nor there. You want to know what's on the program, and I will tell you, we have a great show planned. I know I say that every week, and yet every week, it is very accurate. It's always more fun, though, when you get involved. 312-981-7200 is the number. That's the phone. That's the text. And if you want to stay in touch with us on social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. When you do call in, you'll be talking to Cody. I am so tired. I can't believe I'm having computer issues already. Goff, he is the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. If you're nice to him, you get to me. Be patient with him tonight. He may be a tad groggy. He has just traveled back from the far-flung corners of central Iowa, and he is everything all right in there now? We're getting it figured out?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm throwing Carmen under the bus. Took forever to get out of our way. And so you ran out to do something, and you came back, and you didn't seem like you were ready to handle your task, and I handled it instead, and you handled it, and then everything. I don't like this computer system. I'm not going to lie.
We're both hitting lots of buttons.
Yeah, there's
buttons
everywhere. Too much going on, and it's not an easy fix. The old system was an easy fix. You just click and drag, and boom, everything was set. You could drop stuff in, take stuff out, everything was wonderful. Now, with this new high-tech, all-fangly system, it's goofy. I don't like it. I don't care for it. It makes it very hard for us to correct an error.
Yeah.
And so
I just think the weirdest thing is to move anything in the system, you have to send a Snapchat of a selfie.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
What kind of a mechanic? Why would they program that in a radio thing?
Doesn't make sense. And the fact that, you know, everything is coordinated. So I can't do something here without it affecting you, and you can't do something here without it affecting me, and we can't change things.
That makes us more of a team.
It makes us way too reliant on each other when we should be able to act autonomously to correct something.
I know you're a loner, Brian, but I do rely on you.
I am a complete loner for the most part. I could live in a hut in the woods.
Just imagine.
Just a shack.
Our computers could be connected to Rogers.
Mine are
working.
They're all connected to Skynet. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
And soon we will all be terminated.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. Hopefully not before this program is over, because God forbid you miss a minute of this extravaganza. After 6:30, despite, again, Mark Carmen. I like Mark Carmen. He did a fine job on the sports shows. I've known Mark for years. He used the WGNE as kind of a slam. Would you agree?
I saw you take offense.
I took offense to that. We are on WGN, and we do have a lot of SIU grads who work at this station, including our boss,
Ooh.
Who was in the same class at SIU that I was. Roger is an SIU grad. Judy Pilak is an SIU grad. John Williams is an SIU grad. Pretty good list of people here at the station who are SIU grads, not to mention all the SIU grads.
I think Steve Grzanich also.
Grzanich, all right, put him on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people, and a lot of people in this area, a lot of people who are listeners went to SIU or had kids or friends who went to SIU. They visited SIU. So if you've been to SIU over the last 30 years, you stayed out late on a weekend night at one of the bars on the Strip, you have no doubt encountered my guest after 6:30. Winston Mazo is the bagel man. And after 34 years putting up with drunken college students, 34 years.
That's
he retired this weekend.
Wow.
At the age of 75. So, and the reason he came to Carbondale, it's an inspirational story, good story. And plus, I thought just, Roger, for you and I, a nice tie-in to our alma mater, which we're very proud of.
Yep.
So we will talk to Winston. Then after 7 o'clock, you know what Friday is? It is Cinco de Mayo. That's right. Even those of us who have no ties to Hispanic culture or Mexico at all, we still love to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. It's a big holiday here in Chicago and all over the world, all over the country at least, and all over Mexico. So we will we'll be visited by a taco pub that has a very cool Cinco de Mayo celebration. We'll talk to you about tacos and margaritas and all sorts of festivals. We have some stuff here in Karen County. We'll be back after 8 o'clock to answer all of your legal questions. So that is good. The big news this week, the Noonans welcomed a new member to the family. It was not something I had planned on. I know a lot of parents say that. You were unplanned. They don't usually say that to their new additions, do they? That would be seem kind of rude.
Yeah,
some kids figure it out. They just know that they were on one. Now, we didn't have a kid, in case people are, oh, my God. He's said some horrible things before, but now he's saying a child was not planned. No, that's not it. Those of you who have listened for a long time, those of you who know me, you know that I am a dog guy from way back. We've had dogs. Now, Tuesday was our 25th anniversary. So we've been married for 25 years. For 24 of those years, we have had dogs. For 23 of those years, we have had two dogs on and off. When one would pass away, there'd be an appropriate amount of time and a new dog would enter our lives. So in August, my dog Spike died. And he was 14 when he died, 13 when he died. Good dog. And I immediately said to my wife, well, our remaining dog, Gidget, who is 7, I said, we're going to have one dog now for the rest of our days. Because we're getting up in years, Roger. And I like to travel. I like to do things.
Yeah.
Dogs are a commitment. And we've got a long time left with Gidget, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Only
willing.
7 years old.
Right. So, we, yeah. You know, if based on some of our other dogs' ages, Spike lived to 13, Baloo lived to 14. So
oh,
we've
wow.
got, yeah, so we've got some time left with these dogs.
Mm-hmm.
With this dog. But then, of course, my wife and daughter, as I'm sure many of you have gone through this, someone in the family says, no, there will be no more animals.
Mm-hmm.
We're done. We've got we're going to stick with the one we've got. We'll be a one dog family. As I like to say, like a lot of normal families. My wife doesn't appreciate that.
She laughs at whenever you say that, right?
Yeah. You know, a lot of normal families only have one dog. It doesn't seem weird to me. You can have one dog and nobody's going to look at you cross-eyed. Say, what kind of freaks are you? You only have one dog? Why don't you have a menagerie? Because I'm not Dr. Doolittle. Relax yourself. Anyway, so my wife and daughter have been slowly putting the pressure on, mentioning, oh, well, you know, Gidget seems lonely.
Aww.
Maybe we need, because she, and that, I used to mock that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to bear water. Because we got Gidget when she was 8 weeks old, and Spike was about 7.
Okay.
So Gidget has always been around another dog. Always. Until the last few months.
She's been moping.
I don't know. Maybe she just got mental issues that have nothing to do with Spike's demise. I don't know. I'm not a dog
psychologist.
She's
moping.
She might be. Anyway.
She's pining.
So I start. This is how my mind works.
Yeah.
I say, all right, listen, we'll think about it. But how about we don't have the time or the energy for a brand new puppy. We're not around enough. I don't want a new puppy. An eight-week-old puppy the first time was a nightmare, trying to potty train and everything. And it helps having an older dog, so it did expedite the process, but still, I don't want to do that. I said, how about this? How about we start looking for a dog that's around the same age, like 5 to 7-year-old dog, maybe even a little older? Because then our window of dog ownership stays approximately the same.
Mm-hmm.
Our commitment is doesn't change, and we're helping out another dog. Everything's hunky-dory. Well, best laid plans. What does that mean? I'll continue the story after this. Now, Cody, am I able to hit the button? If I hit the button, are we going to do the right thing?
I don't know what's going to happen, Brian.
Well, you need to tell me. Well, I'm hitting it anyway. So we figure it out.
I was kidding.
And you write the logs however you need to
fudge
them.
I know what's going to happen.
I know you fill out the logs like the president fills out his tax return.
Hi-oh!
So we'll get it all figured out on WGN. As I said, best laid plans. If you're just joining us, we have a new addition to the house. I was talking about how my wife and daughter have been kind of moving along. And I had said to them, all right, I'll start looking at adult dogs. And so we had looked. We've gotten 3 of our dogs from South Suburban Humane Society. We've rescued Spike out when we lived in California. So we're looking at all the different websites and looking at dogs and trying to find a lot of puppies, a lot of pit bulls. And I know a lot of people have different opinions of pit bulls. My wife is not crazy about pit bulls. So the pit bulls were kind of out of the question, but we were looking. So then a friend of mine the other day posts something on Facebook from a shelter, Felines and Canines, which is up on the north side. It's way up on Palina at, I don't know, way up, almost in Wisconsin. It's pretty far up there. Anyway, so we go, we're looking on this website, and we see this dog who they say is 3 to 4 years old, and he's a lab mix. And he looks like he just looks sweet, and the description of him is great. He's laid back. He's a little nervous around other dogs. They say, well, he had a fracture in his front leg but it should be okay. But he just looks like a sweetheart, this dog. So we're like, all right, you know what? Let's go take a look. Now, Tuesday, as I mentioned, was our 25th anniversary. We had planned on going out to dinner, as most people do on their anniversary. You know, you go out for a little dinner, you'd say, Bubba. No. Tuesday afternoon, I load Gidget in the car, and I meet Debbie up at this shelter, Felines and Canines. And the people up there, very nice. The ladies we dealt with, very, very nice. Felinesandcanines.org is the website, if you want to go. Long story short, this dog is wonderful. Lawson is his name. This dog is wonderful. However, this dog is not four. This dog's not even three. According to my vet, this dog is two.
Whoa.
Yeah, this dog is all puppy.
Oof.
He's 53 pounds of pure, psychotic, loving puppy energy. He's nuts. So we're up there, and I knew he was a puppy. I saw him from down the block because they wanted us to keep the dogs separate because, as I said, he was nervous around other right. dogs because he had been attacked at the kennel in Kentucky. Mm. He's a hillbilly dog.
Mm.
Comes from Kentucky. I don't know if he was a moonshiner's dog or he was a coonhound. I don't know what he was.
Yeah.
But he's down there, and somehow he broke his leg, and nobody fixed it. It just heals on its own.
Oh, no.
So he's got some character because he's got a little bow leg and he's got a little limp to him. So he's got a hitch in his giddy up. But we all have flaws. That's I'm not going to take it away from him. He loves people. So anyway, I see him, like I say, from down the street because I'm down the street with Gidget.
Right.
And I see this dog just leaping into the air and I'm like, oh no, this dog is not four.
Uh-oh.
This dog's out of his mind.
Jeez.
Well, we spend like 40 minutes outside and the dogs get to know each other. Then we spend another half hour inside and the ladies from Felines and Canines are keeping close watch to see how the dogs react, and Gidget's low-key.
Yeah.
So everything seems to be going along fine. And, of course, Lawson is up on Debbie's lap, then he's up on my lap, and he's
just so happy to see you.
Yes, and I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
This is a done deal. How can we possibly do? And then they're telling us about his medical condition. Everything else is fine, but the leg, you know, worst-case scenario. Then they get into this worst-case scenario about how at some point, you know, maybe the leg would have to be amputated. And I'm
what?
Like, yeah, I'm like, why would you say that? Well, we just have to down the road. Everything, the vet in Kentucky said he was fine and everything's okay, but we feel we have to disclose this. And you know, three-legged dogs can live a long time. And I'm like, I understand, but I don't want to think about this, you know, minutes into accepting him into our home. Anyway.
Yikes.
We take him home Tuesday night.
You said yes.
We said, of course. I couldn't. Now he's there, and it's that's why you don't. Here's the thing: you don't go to shelters unless you're ready to take an animal home, because one, you see them all in the cage, and they're looking at you.
Yeah.
And if they could talk, you know, they were like, "Hey, dude, you got to get me out of here, because in another couple of days, I'm done. So really, I'll be good. I'll get your paper, whatever you need. I won't poop in the house.
That's what Rufus did.
Whatever you got to do. Exactly. They'll go home. So we take him home, and now, and Friday I took him to our vet because they give you like a 7-day money back guarantee. It's like, hey, listen, if you find a better dog anywhere else, we'll give you your money back. I was like, all right.
Kick the tires and, you know, check under the hood.
With his leg and stuff, they were like, normally they give 3 days, where if the dog doesn't fit or you change your mind, I don't know why people take it home. Maybe it's not what they thought. Buyer's remorse, whatever.
And it happens.
Right.
Sure.
So I wanted to take him to our vet. Because again, they didn't really know how old he was. They in Kentucky, I don't know if they can even count in Kentucky. They didn't know how old he was. So
maybe he didn't have the proper papers. That's you know, they were
he even have the papers. Now he has the papers.
They did the same with Rufus. They said, well, we think he's around 3 years old.
Yeah. And they never know what he is.
Yeah.
Nobody's known what any of our dogs are.
Yeah.
You know what they are? They're dogs.
Right.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
They're dogs. We take care of them. That's how it works. So I take him to my vet. The vet checks everything out. Oh yeah, he sounds good. He's got a little, little upset stomach, I think, from all the new stuff and adjusting.
Exactly.
So there's
nothing
big there.
All right.
And the vet looks at the leg and he says, well, this is what they call a green stick fracture. So you know when a branch is new, you can't break it in half.
Right.
You can just kind of twist it and it comes apart. So the vet's pretty much positive that that's what happened with his leg, and then a callus formed around it. And he said, well, in another year or so, that callus may go completely away, and you'll never know. And if not, and then my own vet says, and if not, I had a three-legged lab for 13 years. I'm like, what? Stop with the foreshadowing. You know, everybody's telling me, you know what, three-legged dogs.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like it's a status symbol now. You know what, you're nobody if you don't have a three-legged dog. Four-legged dogs? Pfft, heck, everybody has a four-legged dog. What you need to get is a three-legged dog. Better yet, get a one-legged dog. Teach it to hop around like a pogo stick. Then
put
maybe
the
you call
on
it pogo.
Put the wheels on him.
Yeah, get
the
him a cart strapped to a skateboard. Just pull him around. Whatever, he's there, he's not leaving.
Right.
This dog could not be happier in his new digs, and we're happy to have him, and the two of them seem to be, the two dogs seem to be.
Now?
For the most part, they're feeling each other out to find out who's going to be the big dog.
Yeah.
You know, because Gidget was always the second, then for the last few months she's been the only.
Right.
And now I think she's trying to decide, is she going to exert her dominance?
Mm-hmm.
But she's not really dominant. In the backyard, she's been a little dominant, slapping him around a little bit and initiating the wrestling and the jumping.
Okay.
But inside, when it comes to, like, treat time, she defers to him.
Oh.
So, listen, I don't know how dogs think. But, again, I'm a big proponent of adopting. This is the fifth dog that we've rescued in the course of our marriage. And so far, we've been real lucky with the first four, and I'm hoping we're just as lucky with the fifth. He's off to a real good start. And I want to thank Steve Dale. You know Steve Dale, who does his big pet show here on Sunday mornings?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Steve Dale is a wonderful, wonderful resource. If you don't have his cell number, really, you should befriend him so you can get it. Because I texted him Tuesday morning. I was like, hey, we saw this dog. What do you know about this shelter, felines and canines?
Ooh.
And he was like, oh, they're very good. They're legit. They're, you know, if they tell you the dog is good, the dog is good. So thanks to Steve. He's actually going, he's my dog consigliere. So tomorrow I have to talk to him about potential warning signs of what might be going on. So
thanks to
him. Thanks to everybody at Felines and Canines. We now are back to being a two-dog household.
Well, God bless you.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah, see, we said the same thing about Rufus because, you know, we had a cat.
Right.
And the, when, and we had,
Roger, I hate to do this.
Yep.
You,
news.
You have to do your news.
Yeah.
So we have to do this.
Okay.
All right. Now, we've brought this up many times. Roger and I, both proud alums of SIU Carbondale. And if you are an alum, if you have a child that's gone there, if you visited Carbondale in the last 30 years, there is no doubt if you spent time on the strip like I did. Did you spend time on the strip, Roger? Or were you too busy in the library?
No. Library.
I don't know what you did.
No. I was either in the communications building or I was opening bars at 12 noon.
Opening, you were opening the bars.
Well, they opened and I walked in.
Sure. See, we had different. I was a guy who would go happy hour, progressive happy hour at TJ's started at about 3, and then every hour they would raise the price like a quarter.
Yeah.
So I'd be there at 3 and stay till the end. I was not that.
I'd welcome you as you walked in at 3 because I would have already gotten started.
All right. So Roger was probably in bed. Well, this is after Roger's time. But if you were like me and you stayed out late, you knew no matter how much you spent in the bar, you had to save at least $1 for the walk home because you would inevitably come across our guest who has had a wonderful 34-year career in Carbondale. Winston Mizzo is my guest. He is the bagel man who, after 34 years, called it quits and retired this weekend. Winston, thanks for taking some time today. I'm happy to talk to you.
It's my pleasure, you guys.
Well, congratulations, first of all, on 34 years. I don't know how you had the patience to deal with drunk co-eds for 34 years, but congratulations on a wonderful run. And I know the weather didn't cooperate this weekend, but you did get to finish up on Thursday night, correct?
Yeah. It worked out okay. I mean, the weather's out of my control.
Right.
So did what I could anyway.
So now, 34 years ago, 1983, you opened this, but you came to Carbondale a few years before that. What brought you to Carbondale?
I came here from the Army.
And you grew up in the area, though, right? You grew up in, where'd you grow up, Heron?
Heron, yeah, Heron, Illinois.
And so you went into the Army, and then you came to Carbondale.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. Came to here on a GI Bill, went to SIU on a GI Bill.
And what'd you get your degree in?
Social work.
Social work. Very nice. Now, I always like to talk to people who've changed their lives, and there was a big change in your life that brought you to become the bagel man. What was, What was it about your life that you changed when you started doing the bagels?
Well, I got the bagel cart, make a long and short of it, to have something to do because I was sobering up, trying to sober up.
And so you got...
I needed structured time and make a long story short. Gentleman in the 12-step program had one, and I just took it from there. He was working on a PhD, and, of course, he wasn't going to keep it.
Right.
So me and a buddy of mine just started one of our own from his original cart. The idea came from him, though. I got to give credit for it, too. The idea came from him. The only thing I did was added a bunch more toppings.
Yeah, I remember the guy, because I was a junior when you got to, when you started in 1983. That was my junior year. And I remember the guy in front, before you, good bagels, good concept, but yeah, his toppings were a little more limited than yours.
Yeah, like I said, I just added a few more toppings, gave him a little more options.
And you started, so this was, you would work Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights, and what time would you get to the strip?
Back then, I tried to work 5 days a week, or okay. 5 nights a week, back then.
And was it hard being out at that hour for a guy going through, as you said, you were going through the 12 steps and sobered up. Now you've decided to put yourself right in the middle of the bar scene in Carbondale. Was it difficult at first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was hard.
And was it?
Because I hit bottom, and I knew I couldn't drink.
And yet everybody you were dealing, not everybody, but let's say a majority of the people that you were serving your bagels to, they had just come out of a long night of drinking.
Yeah, but that didn't have nothing to do with me.
That's
nothing
true.
Outside of me caused me to drink.
Right.
It was the way I looked at the world.
And so this was...
I blame people for my drinking until I realized nothing outside of me made me drink. I wanted to get drunk and stay drunk because of the way I looked at the world.
Yeah.
I wanted to eat the softer weight.
And then when you made the decision, were you already in school or were you done with school when you made the decision to get into the program?
Long time. I graduated in 71.
Okay.
I'm 75 years old.
I know. Yeah, I can't believe that you still had the stamina and the energy to get out there because that's a long night. Nine to what would you stop? 2 or 3?
Well, the bars close at 2, so that's our busiest time sometimes. So by the time I started policing up and loading the cart and stuff, it's probably around 3, give or take, 3:15, 3 o'clock.
And then you'd go, would you go right to, it said in the Daily Egyptian had a great piece on you the other day, and it said you would go right then to Walmart to restock for the next night.
Yeah, if it was my weekend, I'd have to get supplies for the next night. Because a guy turned me on to that too, and not to make a long story short, guy worked at Walmart, saw me in there during the day trying to get them
right.
When I first started. I didn't know any better, and he said, he gave me the idea, he said, why don't you come after work? There'll be nobody in here. You got the pre-run of the place. He said, it's taking more time to get out of here than it is to get your supplies during the day. He said, why don't you just come after work, 3:30, 4 o'clock? He said, they'll know you, they'll get to know you, they'll have your stuff ready. And you'll probably be the only one in here. Maybe one or two other drunks that have come in.
Yeah, it's beautiful going grocery shopping in the middle of the night. You're right. There's nobody there.
Yeah, so that's what I did, and it worked out real good. The only thing is, like I said, it cost me another hour of work that night, but then I don't have to mess with it. I didn't have to mess with it till 9 o'clock that next day.
Right.
Nice.
So
I could have the whole day free.
Now, it's a pretty simple concept. It's a lot of hard work, but it's a simple concept. You built the cart, and there's a grill right in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you toast the bagel, and the people come up, and they tell you what they want on it. And it's, like
about
I said,
it.
Simple.
It's that simple.
Yeah, and it's a one of those ideas where you think, boy, why didn't anybody else come up with it? This is a great idea. Now, I mentioned when you started, when I was there, it was a dollar. What was Thursday night? What was the price of a bagel before you closed up?
$2.75.
That's not bad. That's not a huge jump in 34 years.
No, but and everything else came up. I want to keep the price as low as possible.
Right.
Everything else came up. Even the gas to get me to the site cost about three times more, just getting to the site.
Now, you were always on the strip right across from Pinch Penny Liquors. Did the city, did you have to like get a permit to be there? Did the city hassle you? What was going, did you ever have to deal with them?
Oh, yeah, we got paperwork an inch thick on that. Now, at first we didn't because they didn't know how to handle us, but they passed an ordinance that we had to have a vendor's license.
Okay.
So we had to have the license, the Board of Health. We got to deal with the Board of Health and insurance. And, of course, wherever we set up, like Gatsby's, when I set up at Gatsby's, for example,
uh-huh.
I have a contract with them that saying it was okay for me to be there.
Okay.
And he charged me $100 a month to sit there.
That's not too bad.
No, we didn't. Just part of doing business, and it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't nothing.
So when you first started, it's 1983, and obviously there's been big changes. What do you think are the biggest changes in Carbondale since you started?
Well, the biggest change for us, of course, is, and it didn't affect us very much, but just the lack of students. There used to be about 21,000 students, right, roughly, I'm estimating. There used to be 21,000 students. Now there's probably 14 or 15.
Yeah, that has been. I've been following that story over the last few years. That's been a big problem with dropping enrollment down there. Has the temperament of the students changed? I mean, you're dealing with them at a time when most of them, hopefully they're in a good mood late at night. They've been having some fun.
You're using the wrong terminology. Well, dealing with them implies codependence.
Okay.
I'm not codependent. I don't deal with nothing but me.
Well, serving them, being out amongst them.
It's a different story than dealing with them.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But I don't deal with them like I don't get into their business. And
right.
I just serve them a bagel and get them on down the road and serve the next guy.
Well, have you noticed a change in their demeanor over the years, or is it all pretty much once they come out, one student's the same as the next?
Yeah, except I met some of the, you're not going to believe this, but I met some of the best kids. The kids that come here are not in my living experience. I've never dealt with kids like that before, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they're some of the most beautiful kids I have ever met in my life. They've got good work ethics. The kids I've met got good work ethics, good morals, just hardworking. I mean, they'll work all night like me in bars and have to go to school the next day. And plus, over at the rec, I'm big in the rec.
Okay.
I'm alumni here.
Right.
And those kids over there are beautiful. And those instructors that I deal with, man, I mean, like I said, I can't say enough about, they're just not people I'm used to deal with. I've never dealt with people like that before. I used to deal with people on the street and drunks and people like that. It was just like a culture shock.
Is that
these beautiful kids.
Is that what you're going to miss the most now that you're retiring?
I'm going to miss the most, yep. That sure is.
And what are you going to miss the least?
Loading that cart up. Cold rain, snow. I mean, caught in the rain, have to load it in the rain. And I'll tell you what, between me and you and the fence post, you said I'm energetic at this age, but between me and you and the fence post, those nights were getting longer and longer.
I can only imagine. So what are your plans now that you finally, at 75, you finally decided to put away the cart? What are you going to do?
Well, my life won't change all that much because I've always went to the rec, which I'm going to continue doing, of course. And I'm a serious pool player.
Okay.
I've been training for about 10 years with this guy that's A player, and trying to learn some tricks from him. And now, since I don't work Friday, I can go to a couple tournaments with him, tag along, and maybe play.
Very nice.
My 12-step work, I'll still continue that, of course. That's a big thing. And I'll be able to go to more out-of-town meetings and that I can't go to now.
Right.
I'm going to travel a little bit on Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah, you have your weekends free. You can do whatever you want now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not too bad.
It hasn't set in yet.
Yeah.
It just hasn't set in. And, hey, I don't have to go take inventory. Look at that van, go out there and open the van up and look in the van and take inventory and see what I need.
Is anybody going to take over for you? Or is this the end of the bagel man on the strip?
Well, I got a couple guys that's interested. I haven't seen any money yet change hands, but I've got a couple guys that's interested. In fact, the guy that my mentor, I call him my coach, my full coach, his grandson wants it. And of course, if he gets it, now I'll help him out. I'll give him some free time and try to get him up to speed.
There you go.
Now, because he's a good kid. And I'd like to see him make a go of it if he gets it, of course.
Yeah. Well, Winston, I'll tell you, when I saw this story, it brought back a lot of great memories, and I had to talk to you and congratulate you on a wonderful long career, and I know you've done as much for Carbondale as it's done for you. So congratulations, and best of luck in your retirement. It was really nice to get to talk to you.
Hey, it's been my pleasure, and tell everybody I said hello.
I sure will. Take care, Winston. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Yep, bye-bye. That's Winston Mizzo. He was the legendary bagel man on the strip in Carbondale, and he is retiring now after 34 years at the age of 75. So if you're going down to Carbondale for graduation and you were thinking, oh, man, I'm going to get a couple of beers, then I'm going to have some bagels, no luck. Bagel man is gone for now. Maybe a new one will pop up. All right, after this, we had to cut Roger's story off because somebody texted in. They were very upset that we cut Roger's story off about his dog, Rufus. But Roger knew what time it was. He had to do the news. That's, you know, he gets very upset. So we'll touch with Roger on that. And then we have, since we've been talking about dogs and that, we have a crazy little animal story. We'll get to all of that after this on 720 WGN. I was going to let Roger finish his story about his dog, but he is nowhere to be found. He's obviously doing newsman-y stuff. He's filing reports. He's writing stories. Perhaps he's doing an in-depth investigation on something. He's going to blow the lid off some big story. Perhaps there's a scandal at City Hall, or perhaps he's doing a follow-up on Winston Mizzo, the bagel guy, the bagel man, so he can file that, and that'll run for days and days. I don't know what he's up to, but anyway, if he comes back. All right, Cody, I'm going to give you a choice, because you were very – Cody's very tired. Cody's very tired because he went to Drake. He went to your alma mater. Since we just spoke about my alma mater.
Yeah.
You went to your alma mater this weekend.
Nice transition, Brian.
I am a professional broadcaster. Mm-hmm. That would be argued in many circles of professional broadcasting. And yet, I believe that if you're being paid and you've been in a place for, can you believe it? I'm going to say this. In 2 weeks, 11 years I've been here at WGN.
It's a long time.
11 years. And look what I've become.
Anyway, have you become? What is
a professional broadcaster. I've become a professional broadcaster.
That's what
I've become. Anyway, so that's why the transition was good. But you went out to Drake because, as we know, this was the weekend for the Drake Relays.
Good old Drake Relays, second biggest track and field event, at least
in the world.
Well, behind the NCAA Track and Field Championships.
It's pretty good.
It's a big deal. World records are set. Probably not this weekend because they were under about 1,000 inches of rain.
Because we got it all, but you got it first.
It was
in Des Moines.
A torrential downpour and cold all 3 days I was there.
Dude, on weekends where the weather is good, in the past when you've gone, because you went while you were at school and you've gone back every year, do students go to the relays?
Some.
Or is it just a big, like, festival atmosphere?
It's more like a festival atmosphere, like a homecoming, but for Drake. And it's a big deal for the school and for the city.
Oh, sure.
World records are set at the Drake Relays. It's a really big deal. People come from all over for this.
Did you ever try to make time with a female shot putter?
No.
Really?
I should have.
I don't know why
I would,
that. Because everybody would think, well, let's get the long-distance runners or perhaps a pole vaulter or something. Nice shot put woman.
I like the pole vaulters.
Well, all the an athlete's an athlete. They're all good athletes.
Athletes are all
world
good.
Class, I would say.
I was always cooped up in the production truck.
Oh, really?
Because the Drake Broadcasting System.
Oh, that's right. DBS.
We always had a big TV crew kind of. We had a student run production.
Nice.
Of the relays, it was a big thing. Bunch of cameras in the whole.
A bunch of cameras.
Bunch
you say,
of cameras
for a TV production.
So many cameras.
There were
cameras.
A bunch of cameras.
Multiple cameras.
This is why sometimes I question if I am in fact a professional broadcaster, because I would have never imagined in my wildest dreams that a TV production would require. A bunch of cameras.
Tremendous cameras.
Yeah. The best cameras.
They were the best.
They're, sad.
Yeah. yes, what I just said is sad. But yeah, aside from the rain, I didn't make it to the relays themselves, but many festivities were had. Many drinks were featured at those festivities. I had many of them, and now I'm here.
Is there a special Drake relay drink?
Not really.
No, there's not a signature drink.
It's the pole vault. If I were an undergrad, probably Keystone Light or something.
That's going bad. Isn't it nice now to be an adult where you have some income where you don't have to, like, we were, Bush was our go-to low rent beer, or Lone Star.
Yeah.
Which made me feel like a cowboy.
Yeah.
Every time I drank it. Despite being in Southern Illinois, I would drink Lone Star and feel like a cowboy, and then I would just sing Willie Nelson songs.
Last night we went to a German restaurant, and I ordered a beer, it's really packed, and they said, do you want half a liter or a liter? And I was not thinking quantity at this time. I'm just like, oh, I want a big beer, so I'll get a liter.
Sure.
Not realizing that a liter of beer is a liter of beer.
A liter of beer. Did it come in a boot?
No, they have boots there, okay. But this one came in a giant mug. Yeah, this guy outside gets it.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, liter is, that's a lot of beer.
This guy's very excited about the boot and the liter of beer. He's so excited, he's willing to stand in the rain in his Red Sox cap and just pantomime drinking a big beer. That's fantastic.
I respect that.
I do, too. Listen, I wish I had a liter of beer to give him. Unfortunately, I do not.
But we might have a liter of something else soon.
Oh, that would be nice.
Well, it's not a liter. No, that was a transition.
It was a very good transition. All right, Roger, I was going to ask you to tell your dog story again, but now we're up against the news again.
Yeah, it's okay.
And people, somebody texted in that I was rude to cut you off. However,
no.
I contend that, you know, you have many clocks up there in the newsroom, and
yes,
you know
I
what
do.
Time you have to actually do
I
your
know.
Job.
And it took me a second to look up and see it, and I'm like, okay, that's fine.
That is fine.
That's okay.
Fine.
We can do it another time.
We talk about our dogs all the time.
I know.
We talk about, our lives all the time.
Yeah.
It's a very, very slice of life. Very WGN-y, as Mark Carman would say, right before I put my foot up his. Anyway, after 7 o'clock, speaking of clocks, it's time to do this on WGN. Because if you don't know, Friday is Cinco de Mayo, which, of course, celebrates the Mexican Army's unlikely victory over the French at the Battle of Puebla. Over the last number of years, Cinco de Mayo, not that you need an excuse to enjoy fine Mexican cuisine and drinks, but Cinco de Mayo has become a day where everybody's like, oh, well, you know, why not? Whether it's in the middle of the week, weekend, it doesn't matter. Everybody wants to get involved in Cinco de Mayo. And Chicago is full of wonderful places to get good margaritas and great Mexican foods. One of them is Broken English Taco Pub. They have three locations, but they are celebrating the first anniversary of the Broken English Taco Pub at Lake End, Michigan. Their downtown location, they're also in Old Town and in Lincoln Park, which, I'm going to warn you, Chef Frank Valdez is here. That's right across the street, literally, from Cody's house.
Wow.
Yeah, he was looking out. He tried to get in the other night, two-hour wait, but he can see he saw your grand opening banner as he walked out of his building.
Well, the thing is, I know who Cody is, and we just didn't allow him to come in.
That's probably best. He's not a good tipper. He's notoriously cheap, and he's very high maintenance when it comes to his orders.
I heard he's a big drinker, too, and he can't handle his alcohol.
Well, I don't know where you get your information, but most of it seems accurate. Welcome. Glad to have you here, first of all.
Glad to be here.
And
glad
congratulations
here.
On the first anniversary
thank
of the
you,
Michigan
so
Avenue
much.
Location.
Thank you for having us here.
Now, tell us about Broken English, because as I said, the city is full of great Mexican places. What's your background and how did you come to open Broken English?
Okay, so my background is I was at a restaurant called Mexique for about 5.5 years. I was a chef de cuisine there. And that was a Mexican-French restaurant.
Ooh.
Then I met the one of the main partners for Broken English, Adolfo Garcia.
Okay.
He said, hey, I got this great idea. It's called Broken English. It kind of celebrates, you know, Mexican culture. It's fun. It's, you know, big on art, big on music. I'm Mexican-American. I said, wow, sign me up.
Okay.
And, you know, less than a year, we're at a third restaurant, and I'm just, you know, sometimes I have to pinch myself and be like, wow, you know, last year, Cinco de Mayo was our first, you know, first day open.
Oh, really?
First day open, the one-year anniversary. So we're throwing off a huge party.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It's going to be fun. It's called Follow the Mariachi. it's a trolley. You can jump on. There's going to be a 10-piece mariachi band. You hop on at Lake Street, and it's going to take you all the way to Old Town and Lincoln Park. And you're going to get to experience Broken English Taco Pub three times.
Now, are the locations different? So when I take the trolley from Michigan Avenue and I get to Old Town, is it vastly different? I mean, the menu obviously is going to be the same.
The menu is the same, but they're all unique. You know, the one in the Loop is the first one, and you know, it's kind of like having children, right? You kind of get a better sense of what how to parent.
I think
so. Each one is. We're trying to improve and, you know, kind of say, okay, this is what we're going to do here. Bigger in size. The third one, Lincoln Park, is close to 10,000 square feet.
Wow.
So it's
and according to Cody, it's packed.
It's packed.
Packed.
It's packed. And we have a picture of his photo where he's not going to be allowed in.
You'll have to wear a disguise, Cody.
Disguise.
Wear your cloak.
Or you could, you know, I would recommend like one of those, you know, mustaches maybe on Cinco de Mayo.
Wait a minute. If he tries to come into Broken English with a big fake mustache on Cinco de Mayo, he's going to get run out of town for good.
We're going to have security.
not good. But all right. So what? How do you, as you're the chef, you're the guy who creates the menu. What do you look at when you're saying, all right, I'm opening a new restaurant in a city that has a lot of great restaurants already, great Mexican restaurants already? How am I going to differentiate myself and make Broken English a place where not only are people want to go, but it's going to be so successful that now we've got three?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, I've got this thing where I say you got to learn how to walk before you run.
Okay.
So you have to know all the traditional Mexican dishes and whatnot. And then I kind of put tweaks. So, you know, I got a ginger de arbol salsa.
Okay.
You know, it's chile de arbol. It's got ginger in it. And, you know, people are kind of like, wow, it's delicious. Like, where'd you come up with that? It's like, well, I did a traditional chile de arbol. I had a little bit of ginger. I have some pork, you know, heavy tacos. We have 9 different tacos.
Wow. Yes, and a lot of them are sitting right there.
And I brought some in. I brought in the fried chicken taco.
Ooh.
It's got, you know, a ghost pepper mayo. It's got a smoked cabbage slaw. And it's essentially a Baja fish taco.
Oh, I love those.
And instead of fish, it's chicken.
Nice.
So I got that for you to try.
Are people looking for something that's not? I mean, everybody knows the traditional. We like the traditional, especially the neighborhoods that you're opening up in Michigan Avenue, Old Town, and Lincoln Park. Are people wanting things a little more adventurous? Is that a more pressure on you to say, okay, we can't just do great tacos. I've got to do great tacos in a whole different genre.
Yeah, I think we get people who come in and they're a little adventurous, and we also get people who want a little bit more traditional. And I think we find the right balance. Yeah. You know, so I do traditional tacos with, you know, twists. I think that carries over to the drinks. I think it carries over to, you know, if you walk into a Broken English, you're probably never haven't seen a place that looks like that, because, you know, we're heavy on local art. We're heavy on, you know, the ambiance.
Mm-hmm.
You come in there, I mean, in Lincoln Park, you got piñatas hanging, but it's done in a way where it's cool, new, modern, fresh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like back in the day when you'd go to a Chi-Chi's or
exactly.
something.
It's not Chi-Chi's, it's not Pepe's, it's a modern taqueria, cantina, and it's fun.
And so besides tacos, what else do you have on the menu?
Well, I got quesadillas, I got a burger, I have, You know, I have salads. It's you know, there's more than just tacos there.
And when you were coming up studying food, you said that you were chef de cuisine at a Mexican French hybrid restaurant.
Correct.
Was there one cuisine that you focused on, or have you always kind of been?
Well, I worked for a lot of French chefs before, okay. And you know, I really have a fondness for French food. And you know, I owned a restaurant in Dallas, Texas, okay. That was French Mexican, and then I came back.
I've got to stop because we've brought. How does that combine? Because
We're celebrating Cinco de Mayo, so right. A lot of people don't know that, you know, the French were there, and like you said,
sure.
Correctly, it was a Battle of Puebla in 1862. The French brought over a lot of their cuisine over, you know, they didn't like corn. They kind of brought over, you know, we call them bolillos, but it's basically a mini baguette.
Okay.
So they kind of brought over their things.
Was that the bolillo roll came from France?
Yeah, you know, they brought over, they didn't, you know, they don't like corn. They're like, hey, you know, we're more European. We kind of want a little more heartier bread. So I always had the idea that, well, you know, I was working with a bunch of French people and I said, you know, my background's, I'm a Mexican-American, and I said, hey, you know, this is kind of cool. What if I add a little twist? As you know, I did a chile relleno with dill confit, you know. So there's so many different things because food just continues to evolve. I mean,
yeah.
You know, just you look at the United States. I mean, we have so many cultures. It's great.
Well, since you started studying food and your journey to where you are now, what's the biggest change you've seen in the food scene?
The amount of restaurants, probably.
Yeah, it's true. Restaurants are popping up all the time.
It seems like we have so many. No, I think we live in a great city like Chicago where there's so many great chefs. They're pushing the boundaries. I mean, we're celebrating this, you know, week. We're going to have James Beard here.
Yeah.
It's great. You know, there's no other city that would, you know, I think that I would want to live in that, you know, has the great food that we do. And it's because chefs keep wanting to push it and kind of, you know.
Is there are chefs all kind of a little crazy, mad scientist-y? Because it seems like there's, and it's, I mean that in the best possible way, because you're creating.
Agreed. You know. I think we're all a little, we got to be a little kooky to be in the restaurant industry.
Yeah. Well, it's a hard business.
The hours are, you know, long. We work the days when everyone else is, you know, having fun. You know, Friday and Saturdays, you know, Sundays, those are the days when, you know, everyone's going out, it's off, you know, and we're working. But yeah, I think we do. We got to be a little kooky. You have to be. Creative people are always a little.
Exactly. Creative people always have something a little off. Now, who do you brought? You brought somebody with you. You brought one of your mixologists with you.
Yeah, we brought over, she's our beverage director over at Lincoln Park, Emily DeCantor, and she's wonderful. She's brought in a couple of drinks to, you know, she's going to, I think, knock your socks off with the two drinks she's brought in. She's extremely knowledgeable. She's been working at some of the best Mexican restaurants in Chicago. And
she's got a great name for a beverage director.
Decanter.
Perfect.
Right?
Perfect. Welcome, Emily. We're going to talk to you about drinks in a little bit. We're going to get to the tacos next. Chef Frank Valdez is here. Broken English is celebrating their 1-year anniversary. They have three locations, Michigan Avenue at Lake Street, Old Town and Lincoln Park. TacoPub.com is the website. And you got to go there. Now, we started to mention, and we'll mention it a bunch, the Follow the Mariachi, the big trolley celebration for Cinco de Mayo. Do people have to get tickets for that? How does it work so I can make sure I get on the trolley?
It's free, but you, of course, it's going to be limited.
Right.
Because so RSVP, you can do that at tacopub.com, or you can also try to show up at Lake Street at 5:30. That's where it's going to start, and then it heads over to Old Town, then and finishes at.
Is it going to be keep going continuously?
It will keep going continuously for about 2-3 hours.
Okay. And so it's going to start now. You know, people are probably going to take off work a little early Friday. So they can come to Broken English early. What time do you open?
We open, the Lake Street location opens at 11.
All right. So that's good. They can start at 11.
They can have an early lunch.
Right.
And then, you know, call it quits early. And
same with Lincoln Park. Also,
at 11 o'clock?
Yep, 11 o'clock.
Very good. So, yeah, go have a nice lunch. Maybe walk off some of the margaritas and fine drinks, then come back to Lake Street at 5,
5:30. Fill up on some tacos and do it all over again.
And then start going. All right, we'll get to the tacos after this, and then we will talk to Emily Decanter, and we will learn about these. I know we got a margarita because I see salt on the glass, and there's some other delicious red-looking cocktail. So a lot to get to. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions. If you want to jump in, we can do this. Then we'll do that on WGN. We are preparing for Cinco de Mayo. Chef Frank Valdez is here from Broken English Taco Pub. They have three locations, and they have an unbelievably cool-sounding Cinco de Mayo celebration. Follow the mariachi trolley. You get to the Michigan Avenue location, which is at 75 East Lake Street, so right at the corner of Michigan and Lake. About 5:30, you said, Frank, the trolley is going to start?
That is correct. And, you know, people are – it's a 10-piece mariachi band, so, you know – someone could probably become the 11th member by the end of the night.
Very nice. Now, people can't take, I don't know the legalities, that's why I'm asking. People can't take their drinks on the trolley with them, can they, or can they?
I that's a good question. I mean, you could
probably end up finishing them at that spot first.
Yeah.
They go down
so
fast.
So you can stop, and then you can stay a while, because as you said, the trolley is going to keep going. A couple people texted in, because we were talking about how many restaurants are in Chicago and the boom in the restaurant business. They were wondering, with so many new restaurants, and always happening, always opening, do you see a time when the bubble might burst, where we might hit peak saturation of restaurants?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think with anything, first off, the restaurant industry is already one of the most difficult industries to be in. Many fail.
Right. Well, that's why it's amazing that you guys, in a year, you have three locations, and it's only been a year.
And thanks to the customers and people of Chicago. Yeah, and that's kind of why I knock on wood as many times as possible, because I do know how difficult it is in this industry. So yeah, I think eventually you probably will see the bubble burst, and
And the good ones will stay, the marginal ones will kind of drift away, just like in any business.
Agreed.
Any business. Now, somebody else wanted to know Taco, what are the costs? They wanted to know, like, an average lunch with drinks and some tacos, what are you looking at?
So what we do, it's two tacos per order. We also offer platters. They're 6 and 12. So it's actually, as the more tacos you order, so if you order 6, it's $20, and you get to pick and choose.
Okay.
And then if you order the 12, I believe it's
38.
Right. And that's good for when you're going out and you're getting, we're going to post some pictures. Cody took a lot of pictures. Pick your fast food taco place. You're getting artisan tacos.
They're all made in-house. Everything we do is done with love. We use as fresh as ingredients possible. I use, I cook the pork belly output store. I use the...
Nice.
Fresh chiles, the dried, guajillo and chile arbol and chote, and it's all great quality ingredients.
It's what you would expect to pay at a good place to get lunch.
Agreed.
That's it.
I think it's fair.
I looked at the prices on the tacos, and there's a range of prices depending on what's in them, and it also none of it jumped off the page and made me go, oh. Everything, I went, oh, I actually thought to myself, because I'm relatively cheap too, I thought, oh, those are good prices. So there you go. I think it looked terrific.
We got the Brian Noonan seal of approval.
Not that you need it, but, I don't know. All right, let's get into some of this. You brought these wonderful tacos, and they're sitting here taunting me. So what do we got first?
All right, so I brought you three varieties. I brought you the carnitas, which is pork confit.
Ooh.
Again, so that's the thing, when we were talking about French and Mexican. So carnitas is, confit is basically when you cook something in its own fat. So if carnitas is pork cooked in pork fat.
That's what duck confit is, just duck cooked in duck fat.
Duck fat.
Oh, I didn't know what that was. All right.
So, I brought that. I brought over the, fried chicken taco.
Nice.
And I brought over our, this is kind of one of my signature things. It's a chicken al pastor.
Ooh.
And it's done on the spit, and it's chicken thighs. So traditionally, that is pork.
Yeah, I've had al pastor all the time.
So that's traditionally pork.
Very good.
And that is something that it was brought over, by the Lebanese immigrants to Mexico. It's basically shawarma or doner. And you know, in Mexico, they kind of changed it to pork.
Okay.
And then put their own chile rub and kind of, you know, made it their own. But, you know, it was something that, you know, brought over from Lebanese immigrants.
Now, I've seen the places that I've seen the El Pastor and the Big Spit, there's a lot of pineapple in there. Is that
agreed?
Do you do that with the chicken as well?
I do as well. So it's traditionally served with pineapple.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do is we charred the pineapple. And you serve it with the chicken, and we also have a pork belly variation as well.
Somebody texted in, is pork belly bacon?
Similar. It's not bacon, but, I mean, it's similar. I mean, okay.
Well, because a lot of times, you know, if you watch any food shows or if you listen to interviews, you'll hear these terms, and people know the term, but they're not quite sure.
Yeah.
And they forget. Yeah. They don't look it up, and they're like, well, if I go to places that has it, I'll try it, and we'll see from there.
Well, you cure. It's kind of the same cut, but to make bacon, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, it's similar.
All right. Well, let me try that one. We'll try that, the one first that you said was your signature, the El Pastor.
Sure.
We'll try
so I'm
going
to pass that
Which
to you.
Which one is that?
And that is going to be the one with the pineapple.
Perfect. All right. I'm going to take one
of these. I also brought you two of our house-made salsas. I have a chile de arbol ginger.
Which one
I
would you recommend?
I think with that, I think it has a salt.
It does have some sort of salt.
Yeah, it has the rub already on there. And I think it has a little bit of heat, but it's not overpowering. And you have that pineapple kind of, you know, gives it that nice little
that is delicious
contrast.
So it's chicken thighs with your secret rubs and everything.
Correct. And then that's
the charred pineapple.
Yeah, and then we put that on the spit.
And what's the sauce on this one?
So the sauce on that one is salsa guajillo, which is a type of pepper.
You say that like a man who said that before.
I've said that many times. I can roll a couple R's too.
That sounds great. And so what? I'm sorry. So what is in the salsa? No, you don't have, not the recipe, obviously.
Yeah. So it's got about three different chiles in there.
Okay.
So it's got guajillo, chile arbol. It also has a little bit of achiote in there, and yeah, it's delicious. I think it. You know.
Is it hard to find the line between a salsa that has a lot of heat that would then would take away from the food and enough heat just to complement, because you did all this work on the meat, you don't want to...
Agreed.
You don't want to overpower
I'm
it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of times people think of Mexican food as being overtly spicy.
Right.
And if you ever travel to Mexico, you'll find that it's not that way.
Right.
I'm personally in the camp that says I'm not going to overpower something with just heat. It should have a little bit of heat, kind of, you know... complements the meat, and then kind of goes away. So I always say my food's kind of like a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
It kind of is going to, you know, up, down, and never like a straight line of just straight heat. So you get some acidity in there. You get some herbaceousness from the cilantro and stuff like that.
Perfect. Well, this one is terrific. We're going to have some more. And after the news, Emily Decanter is going to, she's already started one of her own drinks. She could not wait. She's very impatient. We're going to talk about the drinks. Broken English Taco Pub is celebrating not only their one-year anniversary, but Cinco de Mayo with the big Follow the Mariachi trolley ride. Go to tacopub.com. You can get all the information. You can RSVP. The trolley rides are free, but it's limited space. So you want to make sure if you RSVP, you'll be sure to get a space. If not, you show up to the Michigan Avenue location, the corner of Lake and Michigan. About 5:30 is when the trolley is going to start. They're going to go to all three locations. Continuous loop from about 5:30 to 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Yeah, that's about right.
All right, so there you go, tacopub.com. Frank Valdez is here. He is the chef. Emily Decanter is the beverage director. We've talked about food, which we will continue to enjoy. We'll talk about drinks on the other side of the news here on WGN. Now, 1 year, three locations. Chef Frank Valdez is here. Emily Decanter is also here. She is the beverage director. We're going to get into the drinks in a minute. We had the wonderful chicken El Pastor was the first taco. I'm sure that's not the... correct
El Pastor
name.
De Pollo.
Yes, El Pastor de Pollo. See,
it sounds even better.
It does sound better. It sounds, yeah, it sounds
better.
That was terrific. I don't, man, Frank, did you ever do the most interesting man in the world commercials? You
got Dos Equis
commercials. I don't eat tacos nice. Often, but when yeah. I do, it's but when I do.
Oh. And the other one that I ate while we were listening to Rogers News, the fried chicken taco, does that, give us the real name for that, too. Or do you just call it the fried chicken taco?
No, that's the fried chicken taco. Yeah. That,
it tasted great. The name is just, the name seems now pedestrian after Carnitas
de Pollo.
Yes, but that was fantastic. All right, Cody has been raving because we joked about this at the beginning, but your newest location is in Lincoln Park. And Cody is a denizen of that, actually stumbling distance from the new location. And he was out here peppering you with questions. So I told him he can... Pardon me. He can ask a couple before we talk to Emily about the drinks because you're in a very unique location.
It is a unique location. It's actually three spaces and in that has become one large venue.
Wow.
The first space, and we're calling that like the taco stand or burrito bar, was a place called it was like a small little diner, and then it became like a thing called Hoagie Hut.
Okay.
And the middle space actually was a parking lot that was converted into a restaurant space. And the third space was a coffee shop.
Wow. And so how is it laid out now if people walk in to the new one?
So it's, there's a lot of doors.
Am I going to get lost after a couple margaritas? Am I just going to be wandering around?
It's kind of like
around?
A labyrinth.
It's not a bad place to wander, though.
It is. There's a lot to look at. We have a cow that was on the original corner space, and we kind of had an artist repaint it, and he put Holy on it, and it's our little nod to Harry Carey. I'm a huge Cub fan, and, you know. I think Harry, the space has kind of gone through a lot of different restaurants.
Okay.
And so we're trying to break the curse. So I was like, maybe we should even bring a little goat in here and kind of do something. I was like, if the Cubs could do it, you know, I think we can do
really.
It too.
Yeah, really. And now with taking over all three of the spaces, you can break, you know, maybe the curse was leaking in from one of the other places, but now you've got the whole deal and you can wander around.
Agreed.
Now, Cody also said you guys are at this location, and I don't know if you do it at the others, you're going to start having, you have breakfast. Or you're going to start having breakfast at the Lincoln Park.
Well, we will start. So we were a little bit busier than we thought, and we kind of held off on the breakfast burrito bar. But we will be unrolling it pretty soon.
A breakfast burrito bar.
And it's build your own burrito. So, you know, you get a choice of, doing a choice of tortilla, or you can do it, in a bowl, egg whites, fried eggs, scrambled eggs,
potatoes,
choose your protein. So we kind of leave it to the consumer to do, you know, kind of be the chef.
Nice. We like that. And so that's coming too. And I like that you seem a little surprised that people, that's a great problem to have, that you were busier than you thought you were going to be. That, I mean, that's a testament to the other two locations and, you know, what you've done up to this point.
I think sometimes it's better to kind of, you know, set the bar low, right? that's my whole thing. Right. My whole life I said, hey, you know, I'm going to set the bar low, and if I fall, you know, no one's even going to notice.
Well, now with three in a year, the bar's pretty high. So I would imagine the pressure to open the first restaurant is obviously immense. Does it get any easier with each progressive one, or does the pressure to deliver get even worse?
I think it's still, you know, I think the pressure is always going to be there. It's like, you know, I don't think having children is, you know, the third one's like, oh, it's easier now. You know? I mean, you know, sometimes you see things and the learning curve, I think, is quicker. So we kind of, you know, understand like, okay, this is what's going to, you know, we need to kind of address this or, you know, whatnot. But there's always going to be problems. Each one has different, problems that arise.
Okay. And each one is different, as you said. This one, this new one in Lincoln Park sounds immense.
Yeah, this one is great. I mean, it you can go in there, you can just, you know, order a couple of drinks, you can have some tacos, like we said about the breakfast burrito bar. We also have some vintage games. We have a vintage foosball table, have
cool.
A shuffleboard. We have Miss Pac-Man and Galaga. which one of our bartenders on his first couple nights, I think the score is like 214,000.
Wow.
I don't think it's ever going to be beat. And that's all free of charge. I mean, so you can just kind of go in there and hang out.
All right. You mentioned ordering drinks. We've been talking about the food, which is fantastic. We still have one more taco that we have to try. But I got to wash down the first two because they were delicious. And Emily Decanter is the beverage director. Now, you've brought in a couple of drinks. Obviously, tequila and margaritas, they're going to be the mainstay of a taco pub, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, just as Frank was saying with his food, when I create cocktails, because Lincoln Park has an entirely different cocktail list than our other two locations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's going to be sort of our flagship store, and then we're going to move the new cocktails to the other locations.
Nice.
Once we really have our feet planted.
And what's your background in mixology?
So previously, I worked over at Mercadito. Okay. I ran their mezcal lounge downstairs called La Mez.
Yeah.
So my specialty is within mezcal, and I'm from Mexico City originally. So it's really fun to be able to play with the things from my culture.
That's not, and to be able to educate people who really don't.
It's my favorite part of the job.
That's terrific. So now you're creating these, and as I asked Frank about being kind of a mad scientist, anybody creating cocktails, there's that mad scientist mentality too, because you're, well, let's put a little of this, a little of that, and here we go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I try to keep the drinks pretty simple just because we go through so much volume that it has to be easy for a bartender to just pick up a few bottles, pour them, and go. Shake it, get it out to the table. So the one that you're reaching for now is the classic Tommy's Place Margarita.
And I mentioned this to you off the air, but I love margaritas. My wife loves margaritas. But like a lot of us who are not mixologists, we don't have a lot of background, we'll go and we'll get the bottle of margarita mix and then add our own tequila. We go, oh, look, we've made margaritas at home. Well, really, we haven't. Is for the layman, is making a good margarita difficult, or is it pretty easy if you have the right ingredients?
I think it's so easy when you have the right ingredients. Like the way that my dad made them when we were growing up, it's always you use fresh lime, you use the appropriate sort of triple sec or orange liqueur.
Okay.
And some good tequila. Like, it doesn't have to be any sort of top shelf stuff, but it does have to, like, if you want a really good margarita, get 100% blue agave for your tequila.
Okay, so you start with the blue agave tequila. And if you were going to go percentage, how much tequila to how much of the triple sec or the orange liqueur?
The general build for a margarita is about 2 ounces of tequila, probably half an ounce to an ounce of the orange liqueur, and then an ounce of lime.
Good.
And then maybe half an ounce of agave nectar or simple syrup, whatever you're choosing to.
See, now that doesn't sound so hard.
It's not. It's a very simple cocktail.
And so this is your traditional.
Yep, traditional margarita, and I made it Cadillac, so I added a little splash of Grand Marnier to it just to make it a little bit boozier, a little bit more of an orange touch to it.
That is a margarita, and it is a delicious margarita.
Thank you.
Perfect. So how many people come in? Obviously, they're going to have other beverages, but how many margaritas do you think you'd go through on a typical weekend night? Can you guess? Any guess of the volume of, like, gallons? How many gallons of?
So we actually go through so many margaritas that we've ended up putting them on draft. So we'll do all of the juices. We'll make them fresh. We'll juice real limes and just go through the first half of our day is just prepping and really making sure that we have the freshest ingredients available. And then we'll put the cocktail into a keg, and we'll go through 5 or 6 kegs in a night.
Holy cow!
It's been insane.
And it's made. You've got the whole thing, so it's not like you're pouring out the everything but the tequila and then adding to the tequila.
It's all in there. Yeah,
that keg is ready to go.
Yeah, our house margarita is truly the most popular drink right now.
Cody would like to know where you store those kegs. If they happen to be anywhere near an open door, he would like to
We have his photo.
It's
his photo.
Listen, okay, in disguise.
Cody, I'll sneak you in. Don't worry.
Again, the disguise. So they're on tap. That's got to be wonderful. After the prep, how long? I can't imagine how long it takes to prep 6 kegs of margaritas.
Well, you have to get, for every keg, it's 4 liters of lime juice.
Not using some weird jumbo limes. You're using regular limes.
Regular limes.
Right. I don't know. Maybe Frank had some limes.
What she does have is a wonderful support staff. Guy, especially a guy named Candelario.
Their
hitting ingredient.
Oh my God.
Is he the juicer?
Yeah. He juices at the speed of light. I've never seen anything like it.
Just By hand, the old school, or the
well,
like
no,
a
it's
an
electric machine. It's an electric, by hand.
Are you talking about candy or the juicer?
I'm talking about candy. You call him he's like the Mexican Chuck Norris.
Exactly.
Man, that's a lot. So how many limes does candy have to juice a day?
Cases and cases and cases.
Wow.
Cases for juicing, cases for crunches.
I don't even want to know how many we're going to go through for Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah,
at all three locations, it's going to be a lot.
So is each location doing the same thing?
Yes.
So each location has their candy equivalent.
Agreed.
And Emily's overseeing the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got kegs of margaritas on standby. Do you start? You know, obviously you're trying to keep them as fresh as possible, but you're going through them so fast. Do you ever get a chance to, like, building up to Friday, you know the demand is going to be increased. How do you jack up? I was going to say, how do you start
so
jacking
early.
Up the stock early?
Well, you know, when was it? We run out.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was in the back juicing. it was
Saturday, Friday night?
Friday night. We had two big parties.
And she's like, I ran out of all the, you know, I think she went to like 10, 12 kegs.
Wow.
It's
kegs of margarita.
Kegs, yeah.
It's like, I feel like it's Christmas Eve and visions of sugar plums are dancing through my head. I'm like, oh, kegs of margaritas.
You know.
And that's just our traditional house margarita. Yeah. I make countless margaritas that we handshake when you get premium tequila. So if you wanted Don Julio or Fortaleza or something like that.
When you're mixing, since you're the expert on tequilas and mezcal, when you're making a drink like a margarita or any kind of, you mentioned use 100% blue agave tequila for the best. Can you really taste the difference when you're mixing in the simple syrup and the other liqueurs and everything else? Can you really taste the difference in the tequilas?
So part of it is, yes, you can taste the difference with the tequilas, especially if you're comparing a tequila that's 100% blue agave versus like 50% blue agave. And mostly you're going to feel it the next day.
Okay, so the better the tequila, the less the hangover.
If you're not drinking 100% blue agave, it's essentially you're drinking 50% Mexican Everclear. It's grain alcohol that they add to it. So it's you're better off doing 100% blue agave. That's all of our house margaritas are made with that, and I don't carry any margaritas that aren't 100% blue agave. Just to keep everybody safe.
No, that's I like that. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got another drink. Emily DeCantor is the beverage director for a Broken English Taco Pub, and Frank Valdez is the chef for Broken English Taco Pub. Go to tacopub.com. Make your RSVP for the big Follow the Mariachi trolley celebration for Cinco de Mayo. It starts at the Michigan Avenue location. The trolleys will start loading at about 5:30. Continuous loop between Old Town and Lincoln Park, all three locations. Stop, get one of the house margaritas just to start, to lay a nice base, and then some of the wonderful tacos, and then, you know, maybe you up your game at the next one. Because you whet your appetite for one, and then you say, oh, now I'm going to go to Old Town. I'll try this one. Then I get to Lincoln Park, and that's where all the exotic drinks are. I'll try some new cocktails in Lincoln Park. Then we'll circle back to Lake Street and Michigan Avenue, and we'll start all over again. All right, we're going to have one more. What's this last taco, Frank, that we're going to try?
That is the carnitas taco. So that is pork confit, a little bit of salsa verde. The salsa verde has a little bit of a toasted pumpkin seed, pepitas.
Ooh.
A little bit of cilantro on top.
Very nice. And then you brought some guacamole as well?
I brought some guac.
And then
chips.
I see a red cocktail that Emily already drank hers, but she left one for us to share, so we're going to do that.
She got thirsty.
Yeah, she did. Listen, she's been waiting very patiently to talk about her drinks, and we've been talking about food, but we are going to talk a little more drinks and more fun. TacoPub.com, Broken English, that's the place for your Cinco de Mayo celebration. More on the other side, WGN. Get on the trolley at Broken English Taco Pub. They're doing the Follow the Mariachi trolley to celebrate Cinco de Mayo, going to all three of their locations, starting at the location of Michigan Avenue and Lake 75 East Lake Street, then going to Old Town and Lincoln Park. And that's Chef Frank Valdez is here. He oversees the menus for all the locations. And Emily DeCantor is the beverage director. We are enjoying the house margarita, which is very nice. And I know you souped it up a little bit for us because, you know, you knew we had problems and we liked a little extra alcohol in our drinks. And this is delicious. I will say, my wife is a margarita addict. So I think right now she's very jealous. And
I think I've got her fixed. Have her come visit.
Well, she works right down Lake Street from you guys. So this could be very dangerous if I let her know that you're there, and then it might be, you know, getting calls at lunch. Go, hey, guess where I am? Oh, again? All right, well, enjoy. So the house margarita is fantastic, and if anybody missed it and they're just tuning in, and you go in and they say, well, our house margarita is on tap, and you're thinking, oh, well, then it's on. No, it's the same as if you went in and they made it fresh by the glass. They just made it by the glass times infinity, because it's huge. And we must thank Candy again for squeezing all the limes at the Lincoln Park location. All right, what is this other drink that you downed quickly?
Yes. Oh, man. So this one is actually, it's my favorite cocktail. It's called Rosemary's Baby.
It's delicious.
Okay.
Is
it going to make me do devilish things? It's the Frank's favorite cocktail?
The devil's inside that cocktail.
Oh, man. It goes down. You said I downed mine. It goes down so easy. So that's the devil in it. But so it's a cocktail based with mezcal. Okay. So that's the smoky flavor that you're getting from it. And then it's essentially a mezcal margarita, but I subbed in lemon for lime, and I made a rosemary simple syrup.
And what is a rosemary simple syrup?
So it's just sugar, water, and then I added some rosemary in the cooking process.
Oh, actual rosemary.
Yeah,
I thought it was some crazy name.
No. That's so the mad rosemary. Science is really making the syrup. So, because I think the herbaceousness within the rosemary simple syrup plays really well with the smokiness of the mezcal. And then I added some blood orange to it to give it, first of all, that beautiful color.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love this cocktail.
This is really good.
Thank you.
And simple syrup for people who, because we talked about making good margaritas for yourself, it's just half water, half sugar,
yep,
right?
Yep, equal parts sugar and water, so.
Then you got your simple syrup.
Exactly.
But our margaritas also have agave nectar.
Exactly. Yes. So yeah, we make all of our margaritas with agave nectar, but this particular cocktail is made with the rosemary simple.
And when you're trying to come up with a cocktail menu, and obviously you're going to keep it in a certain, you know, a lot of tequila and margaritas and things like that, where do you start to go, all right, I know the traditional margarita. Mm-hmm. I've been making these for years. Now, how am I going to really expand? And have you ever gone too far where you had an idea and you thought, this is going to be the best cocktail known to man, I will go down in history books, and then you whipped it up and somebody took a sip and dropped dead?
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
Not that drastically. But.
No, I mean, it's definitely a combination of things that I really like, ingredients that I love to play with. Like, we have one called the Tijuana Tea Time, where, I've been drinking tea forever. It was my mom's thing. Whenever anybody was upset, just put on the kettle. But, I made an Earl Grey-infused Absolute.
Oh.
Yeah, and then added some lemon, some Earl Grey simple syrup, and top it off with peach nectar and blueberry.
Wow.
So it's like a boozy Arnold Palmer. So just really playing with the ingredients that I like to do while at the same time making it accessible. Because, we're going through a cocktail revolution
yes.
right now where everybody's
yeah, between
going
restaurants
back to,
and cocktails, it is a renaissance.
Exactly. So we're going back to Prohibition-era cocktails and really doing variations on those. And so I'm trying to be creative with that sort of idea while at the same time being like, you know what? We're a Mexican restaurant. Let's play with the ideas of really complementing the excellent food that's on our menu.
Is it hard to stay sober when you're trying to concoct these drinks? Because even a mistake, you're going, well, it's a mistake, but it's still okay.
It's not terrible.
Right. It's not. I won't serve it to people, but I'll have a couple of them.
I mean, I definitely try to keep my R&D shifts, research and development, to late night, just about closing, and I'm testing stuff.
That's
out
probably
vinegar,
the best time.
And, oh,
yeah,
this is really good, and then I'll come up with them the next day. Be like, okay, maybe this was just good because I've had so many.
Well, then you have to ask somebody who wasn't there.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
somebody who's bright eyed and bushy tailed. But it's terrific. And so now again, explain. So Lincoln Park right now is going to have a different cocktail menu than Old Town and Michigan Avenue. And once you perfect all those, then you're going to expand that menu to all three locations. Is that what you were saying?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So our cocktail menu is different. We do have specialty cocktails that are different than any of our other locations. So it's just another excuse to come and see us on
right.
Cinco de Mayo.
Get on that trolley.
But, I really wanted to play with a bunch of different spirits. So I've got tequila, I've got vodka, I've got a cachaça cocktail. Ooh. So like a Brazilian sugarcane rum sort of deal.
Wow.
And just having something for everybody. And so once that really gets hammered down at Lincoln Park, people have been incredibly receptive to it so far. They've loved the cocktails. I'm
very nice.
Really excited about it. So they're going to move to the other locations quite soon.
Great cocktails and great food go together, as they do at the Broken English Taco Pub. Go to one of their three locations. They're celebrating their first year anniversary, but for Cinco de Mayo, start out at the Michigan Avenue location. Get on the Follow the Mariachi trolley. Go to all three locations. Get off, have a couple of tacos, have a nice drink, and then get back on the trolley and go to the next location and see how different each one of them are. This has been great. Before we go, Frank, the carnitas taco is fantastic as well.
Thank you so much.
It's very delicious. And, Emily, the drinks are great. Chef Frank Valdez was here. We're going to try some of the guacamole before you leave. And then Emily Decanter is the beverage director. Thank you very much. Continued success and congratulations on the wonderful first year.
If the first year is any indication,
you're going to be an empire by the, year three?
Let's hope
Ready
so.
For an empire? Yeah, let's do it.
Fingers crossed. TacoPub.com is where you can RSVP for the Follow the Mariachi trolley. Broken English Taco Pub. We appreciate it. Happy Cinco de Mayo. And we're going to finish up these drinks and stuff while we do this on WGN. Welcome back. So you took a little time off, a little week off. You just jetted out of town
Got a little sun in sunny Arizona. And it was nice to be away from this weather. And now it's nice to not be here again.
This would be the weekend. This would have been the weekend to go to Arizona.
Exactly.
If you didn't want to be in a monsoon and suddenly it's 40 again, and you're like, wait, where'd I put my winter coat? Not good.
Bad stuff.
Not a fan at all. All right. A lot of stuff's going on. Everything's going on. Let's start with an industry that I despise, but I use because I have to. The airline industry. You flew out to Arizona. I know you didn't drive or take a Conestoga wagon. Sorry, that's a tequila talking. But United has been getting a lot of bad publicity. First, they drag the doctor off the plane. Then they boot another couple. Then they kill a rabbit. It's not a good month. March has been not a good month for United Airlines. And now it comes out that they settled with the doctor.
Right.
But, of course, because it's, undisclosed, wink, wink, nobody knows. And that's always part of those kind of settlements, right, where they say, non-disclosure agreement must be signed. We'll settle with you. We probably won't admit any wrongdoing, but we're going to hand you some money anyway.
That's right. And normally there's a confidentiality clause on both sides. You can talk about the fact that there is a settlement, the case was resolved, but you can't talk about the terms of the settlement. Now, in this case, actually, it might have behooved United to let the public know exactly how much they paid. My assumption, based upon just, obviously I don't know anything more than anybody else,
sure,
but based on the effusive nature of the plaintiff's lawyers saying that United did the right thing and he didn't have to bring the lawsuit and it happened quickly, it was a big amount of money. And I used to say, I was saying about $1 million, and now I'm thinking it could be as much as $2 million.
Really?
Again, my guess only. So if that's
that attorney would be happy because he's probably getting a third, correct?
And he has amassed over $1 billion of settlements and trial verdicts over his years.
Oh, wow.
He is one of the most successful lawyers, not only here in Chicago, but in the country. He's an excellent lawyer. And, this was kind of a no-brainer for him. But again, I thought maybe United would want to say, listen, we paid $2 million to this guy because we acknowledge that we did a really bad job here. We're going to change things, which they're doing.
Sure.
And to really just let this be in our past, we paid all this money, and have people go, wow, they really did make it good.
So you think that the dollar amount would have been better than just knowing that they settled?
Maybe. I think we all think,
knew they were going to settle, right?
Of course.
You didn't even have to have any cursory knowledge of the law to go, oh, they're paying.
Well, and the lawsuit was not filed.
Right.
And you could tell that the lawyer was just saying, they were just meeting and they were making, making arrangements.
Talking.
They were talking.
Fine.
Yeah. But again, we may never find out exactly what's in that settlement agreement. But what we do know is that the airline industry is going to change, and it sounds like it's changing already.
Right.
And there may be a different culture there and a more sensitivity to flyers and travelers. And I think that's a good thing. And I know that, Brian, we talk all the time about lawyers and getting bad names, and they're litigious and suing over everything. But I really really think a case like this, we have a situation where the threat of litigation, the threat of now exposure on from cell phones and the like, really is going to keep industries like this in line in the future. And it's a good thing.
Yes, a company like United knows they can't win, not only in the court of public opinion, but they've got, everybody's seen the video of this guy being dragged off their plane. And why he was being dragged off their plane. Now, there may have been other circumstances that we don't know about, but the visuals, the optics are, man, United is awful, and this guy deserves to be paid, and so now they paid him. How long, in general, or is it a blanket thing, the confidentiality agreements, is he ever going to be able to say what he got?
No.
I mean, he can tell his wife, whatever.
He can tell his wife, he can tell his accountant or his financial manager or whatever. But no, it's a forever confidentiality agreement. And interestingly, over the 31 years I've been practicing law, I have hardly ever seen, maybe on one or two occasions, where there has been a breach of that. And you just don't want to open that up. I mean, it probably says that if he does breach it, they have the right to come back and try to get some of the money back from him.
Yeah.
So he's going to keep his mouth shut. United certainly isn't going to say anything if they deem that this is the way to go, and we'll probably never know.
Are those kind of things taxable?
Probably not. Usually, if something is taxable, it's in lieu of income. So, for instance, I just settled an employment discrimination case where the company paid some money, and because that money was in lieu of income, lost wages, really, the government comes in, if you don't pay taxes on it, and they say, well, that really was what you would have gotten for a year's salary, so you should have paid taxes on it. So, in this case, it was mostly due to the personal injury, the nature of the injuries. Could some of it be in lieu of income that he lost? Maybe, and maybe just a portion of it might have been deemed to be taxable, but my guess is that most of it was not.
Right. So you're in a situation like this, and you retain a lawyer. How often are you going to have to actually go to trial, or are these kind of things settled out of, like United said, do they get settled a lot?
Federal cases, I was just in this case that I just settled, Brian, the federal magistrate judge said, do you know that the current rate of settling cases going to trial, not in the criminal realm, but in the civil realm, it's about 1%. Only 1% go to trial.
Wow.
It's just too expensive to try them. People don't have the stomach for it. It's very uncertain in terms of results. Depends on who you get on the jury. And so most cases settle these days. It's just too expensive to bring it all the way to trial.
And you mentioned that, you know, hopefully this will now bring about some changes. And we're seeing already United saying that, all right, we're gonna up our offer to $10,000. That's the cap. We'll go up to nobody's going to get $10,000 if they get bumped off a plane. We know that. But it's going to bring some changes to the industry. Southwest already said, we're not going to bump passengers anymore. We're never going to overbook a flight because we don't want this to happen to us. We see it already happening in airlines. Have there been other instances where an individual case like this doctor versus United have brought huge changes throughout different industries?
Absolutely. There's one that comes to mind. I don't remember all the facts, but it was in the 70s, and it was against Ford. It was a Pinto, remember?
Yes.
They put the gas tank in a place where they knew that it was going to cause fires, and if someone
got rear-ended, did it blow up?
And I think the guy got $125 million or something like that. And, you know, in the future, they changed it. They recalled those automobiles, as I recall, and they made changes in the whole structure. Rollover bars. It used to be that you could roll down windows in the back seat. Now you can't, you know, child-proofing things. You know, all kinds of things have changed in all the Ralph Naders of the world. You know, who have advocated, and even just as simple as some medicine caps. Remember when we had the Tylenol situation where people were being poisoned, and now we have, unfortunately for the world, caps that are impossible to get off, even for strong
caps,
adults. I can't do it. I can't wait to get old because there's just no way I'm going to use my teeth if I have any.
That's when you get the little pill case with the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday on New Year's ago, and then your caretaker, Jerry, puts all your pills in a thing, and hopefully he doesn't get mad at you and mix them up.
We won't leave that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. He's not even paying attention.
He really doesn't pay attention to anything I say or you say for that.
Well, listen, you better pay attention to your prescriptions in your golden years, or that's going to be very bad. So this is, it's a good thing, and United did what they had to do. It's not like we can't pat United on the back and go, oh, weren't they benevolent? They had to settle.
They
There's
had to do
no
that.
Chance they were going to win.
I mean,
the
reaction to that first, quote, apology was so horrendous that they had to turn it around. And they had to settle it at that point, because when you acknowledge you did something wrong, that can be admissible in court
right.
in some cases. So, you know, if you basically say we screwed up here. You know, and the other thing that's interesting about the settlement is it did not involve at all the O'Hare police, who
yes.
I believe had some serious culpability, if not more than the airlines, for using excessive force on him when there really wasn't a serious crime committed.
So why isn't their attorney, now granted, the big money is with United, obviously, so you're going to set your sights on them, because overall they're the most responsible. But as you say, the O'Hare police, there's why not set your sights on them as well?
Well, I think that United, my guess is that they just wanted this done.
Right.
And to bring in another party to get their insurance involved, to get them to contribute, and then just fight, do some infighting between right. them, you know, was just something they didn't want to deal with. They knew they were going to pay a you-know-what load of money, and they just went and did it and said, you know what? The cops, you know, we're okay with the cops. It's all on us. They wanted to take full responsibility, and that's all there is to it.
Now, how involved are lawyers when United CEO is making this first apology, which was awful? Does he sit down, or should he be sitting down with his lawyers and saying, all right, how do we craft this message? Because we know he didn't just walk in off the street and speak off the cuff. That was supposedly very structured.
Well, a number of people become involved in these decisions. There are people who do damage control for corporations. There's a gentleman in Chicago named Tom Serafin who has been on the show or been on WGN many times, and he does that kind of damage control. Sure. So when you have an oil spill, you know, he's the one who goes in there and figures out how are we going to, you know, publicize this in a way that is going to be consumer-friendly and user-friendly and not ruin this company's, you know, otherwise good reputation.
Right.
So there's probably those people that are involved in that decision, along, of course, with lawyers.
You got to have the lawyers.
You got to have the lawyers there. And the lawyers are going to be the ones probably telling him to say something stupid, like, I feel sorry for the way you feel about this, you know, some non-apology, you
sure.
know, but lawyers are only supposed to keep their eye on the ball, the legal ball, rather
right.
than the big picture, which yeah. is reputation.
So I know, like, when there's a crime, the police won't release a lot of details because they don't want copycats. Do you think that this kind of settlement from United is going to open the floodgates of people trying to get dragged off planes, trying to find some sort of windfall from an airline?
There's always that thought, and there's always a thought that people game the system, whether it's insurance claims or workers' comp. I hear it all the time. The vast majority of human beings do not cheat
right.
and do not want to be dragged off a plane and are not obnoxious on a plane and don't want to have that kind. All they want to do is get on the plane and get to where they're
exactly.
going.
Exactly.
You
as
know,
quickly as possible.
And even when you get bumped, I think there's a lot of people, like, for instance, I don't know, I even $5,000-$10,000, I may not want to do that.
Right.
I might want to get to my wherever
yeah.
I'm going, and I don't want to ruin my vacation, or I don't want to ruin my business trip. So
right.
I think that yes, you're going to have people who are going to, you know, try to stoke the, you know, these people and try to, you know, maybe mimic this, but I think that's just such a small amount of people. It's not even worth, you know, it's not worth changing a policy to encompass
just
those
in
people.
Case.
Just in case, right.
Karen Conti is here. She's answering your legal questions. 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the fax. Get your questions in as soon as possible. But, Karen, as I say every week, because I like to repeat myself and I love the sound of my own voice, people will wait until the last minute and then they won't get through. So how do they get through to you?
Especially when we have Cinco de Mayo coming up, because that is a holiday
trouble.
Where people get in trouble. It's set
Mucho
tequila.
El Trublo.
You can call me at Yamame at 312-332-7800, or you can email me at kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
I love that you were a little bilingual there. Yamame, very nice.
Sí, hablo un poquito español.
More with Karen El Nexto. So give us a call, 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. All right, the president's at it again. You know, he wants to withhold funding from sanctuary cities. He wants to say the government's not going to pay for that. Well, a judge, Judge William H. Orrick, sided with Santa Clara County, which is where San Francisco is, and said, no, you can't do that. And then, as is his wont, the president went on social media, and the White House issued a statement basically calling this judge, well, not basically, he called him an unelected judge. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I am not a constitutional scholar, but aren't federal judges... judges appointed by the president?
Of course they are.
So he, of course he's not elected, you know, because he was appointed.
And I just feel like, let's put politics aside and you like Trump or you don't. I just think there's misinformation coming from the White House here.
Yes.
Because first of all.
Wait a minute, hold on, really?
I'm going to call it misinformation because he's saying the Ninth Circuit. You know, first of all, this wasn't the Ninth Circuit ruling.
Right.
Okay, it was not. It was a federal judge. The Ninth Circuit is above them, so he misspoke on that. And then he said that 80% of all cases that are reversed, and that's not true because only one tenth of 1% actually go to the Supreme Court.
Right.
So how could 80% be reversed? It's just, that's not true.
Well, math is.
And this
tricky.
Judge, of course he's not elected. He's appointed by the president, as are all of our federal judges in our entire country, including the ones sitting at the federal building here in Chicago. So it's as if he's a lesser judge because a president appointed him and he didn't get elected. So again, that's just, you know, that's taunting people. That's putting them, trying to disparage them. But what I hate about this, Brian, is that it's just making people have disrespect for the system.
Right.
You know, people are going back there and going, yeah, they all get reversed. Yeah, he's not even elected. That's how bad he is. You know, how about pass a law that's constitutional? You know, how about get some lawyers involved and do it the right way? Because there are ways to do some of these things.
Right.
And not such a brash and such a, you know, quick manner. I mean, you know, even the whole immigration ban, you know,
right,
could have been done in a more methodical manner with some whistles and bells that could have been constitutional. But again, this disparaging of our judiciary, again, do I have decisions that I don't like from judges? Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
But I would never go on this show or, you know, from the White House say that our whole system is broken and disparage judges. That's just not what we do.
Well, and the president has done this before with the initial immigration ban. He called out one of the judges saying, well, I think he was Hispanic or Mexican. I forget the exact wording, but that was a thing. He called him out and he took a lot of heat for that. And then the White House, he also said he's going to see them in the Supreme Court.
Ooh.
What do you, you're taunting a judge in a federal court about taking them to another federal court. How?
It just unseemly. You know, I mean, and you can think all you want. I'm sure the presidents, you know, there's a history of presidents not liking what the courts have done.
Sure.
You know, from FDR to Barack Obama. And you just don't hear them talk poorly about our judiciary. First of all, again, I'm going to say this again. It's like you're getting your hair cut and you start to taunt and criticize your barber. That's not the time to do it. You know, these judges are only human. I'm not saying they're going to rule against Trump because they don't like his comments.
Right.
That's not how it works. But he's not doing anyone any favors. He's not garnering any support among the judges who are making these decisions. So I just don't like it, Brian, and I don't like that people believe what he's saying because it's not true.
Oh, and somebody corrected me. It was the Trump University case where he lashed out against the other
against
judge.
The Mexican.
The
That's correct. That is correct. Where he said something about him. He didn't think he could get a fair trial because the guy was Mexican.
Yeah. So it's,
which imputed that he was going to be, you know, punitive with Trump,
right,
because of his race, which, again, not very smart to say those things.
So the other big story this week about, you know, a white guy in power who was doing horrible things, Bill O'Reilly, has been let go from Fox News. But listen, I wish I could get fired from here and get a $25 million severance package because I'd grab Jerry right now in his nether regions and get tossed out of here, and he doesn't even know. He's not even listening, so that's perfect. But if they're going to give
his
me $25
million
to go away, what the heck?
Well, first of all, you know, I still hear people saying, well, no one proved anything. Well, you know, you don't pay that much money. That's not nuisance
That's
value, you know, and it sounds like it was a culture there. I mean, I have dealt with these kinds of issues for 31 years, and again, I don't know any of the details of what actually happened, but I do know that there is sort of a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a law firm, when you're in a corporation, when you're in a school, wherever it is, if it trickles down from on top, and if that's allowed there, and it looks like Ailes was guilty of some of that stuff himself, then you have a culture of treating people like chattel. And, you know, I have been on O'Reilly's show several times. I found him to be a gentleman. I found him to be very engaging and very obviously intelligent and actually kind of playful and fun. And I really enjoyed spending time talking to him outside of the interview. But who knows what goes on? You know, right. What I don't understand about life is if a man like O'Reilly, who has all kinds of money, all kinds of power, not a bad looking guy, he could do whatever he wanted, but he chooses to be at the workplace, if this is true, right. And to put strings attached, you know, we'll get you a job if you do this with me. Why would you do that? Like,
you've got to know it's wrong.
Well,
right?
You know, it must be something we don't understand because. Yeah. Because it makes no sense from a logical standpoint. Like, you know, who wants to threaten a woman into having sex with them? You know, it doesn't make sense. But it was happening. I assume it was happening given all of the accounts. My guess is he's going to land on his feet. My guess is this whole thing was negotiated very, very aggressively by O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll step down, but only if you do this for me.
Right.
And who knows? He'll pop up somewhere else, and he'll be just as successful.
All right. Karen Conti's here, 312-981-7200. Do you have a legal question? Get it in, phone or text, and we will get it answered on the other side of the news right here on 720 WGN. Get your legal questions answered. And as Karen said earlier, you might want to get ready because Cinco de Mayo is Friday. Maybe you had a wild weekend this weekend. You were out in the rain. Something crazy happened. You never know. Right? People do all kind of stupid stuff in the rain.
They do stupid stuff all... Weekends are a big time to do stupid things.
Well, sure, you have too much time on your hands.
It's true.
Too much time, too much access to whatever substance you may want to indulge in.
No bedtime.
Right.
No curfews.
You don't have to get up in the morning.
No.
You think, ooh, I better go out and tear it up. We do have a text question from the 847. Hello, my wife was suddenly let go from a job. She strongly believes it was for reasons that were not mutual. Her employer wanted her to sign a confidentiality agreement. She didn't sign. If she has proof of bad ethics, does she have a case?
You know, probably not. You're an employee at will, right? So that means you can be fired for any reason except those that are prohibited by law, which are because of gender, because of religion, because of national origin, sexual orientation, and the like. If some employer is doing something unethical, and again, I don't know what that is. Is that just they're not treating people fairly? Are they cheating on their bills to their clients? Are they taking government money? If it rises to such a high level that she's a whistleblower, but those cases are so far and few between, and she would have to have been fired for blowing the whistle. It sounds like she didn't do that. So the bottom line is that, you know, she probably doesn't have a cause of action. And those kind of cases, you know, the best thing to do is, you know, she can't go back now, but negotiate a severance, get her some money in her pocket, and then in that case, maybe sign a confidentiality agreement, because if they give you something, you have to expect that you have to give them something, and what they want is to pay you so you don't file a lawsuit and talk about it. So those things happen every day, and that's how you should really treat any kind of separation from a job.
So if you're ever in that situation and your employer is offering or asking you to sign a confidentiality agreement, there has to be something. It's got to be a quid pro quo. You have to get something good in
return.
No,
why would you?
Yeah.
Or a covenant not to compete, a restrictive covenant. Unless you signed one at the inception of your employment, they can't make you not compete when you're leaving unless they're going to give you a nice piece of severance money. And in that case, it has to be enough to get you through so that you can continue to do your job elsewhere without having a restriction.
Now, the roads are, you know, with the rain all weekend, people are driving crazy. There's been a lot of accidents. I know you had... This touched your life very recently, a couple times.
Yeah, Brian, I had two people who are close to me in terrible car accidents in the last 2 weeks. It was just like one after another, and I watched the devastation that occurred because of that, not just physically but emotionally and financially to these people, and in the future, what's going to happen, right? So one of the things that I wanted to tell everybody out there is that, you know, we have insurance, mandatory insurance in Illinois, and it's pretty low. It's like, I think it's $25,000. Per injury and $50,000 in the aggregate, and it's not too much. Probably, I think it's another $20,000 for damage. So that's the minimum that you have to have to get your license to, you know, drive in your car. But listen, if you are in any kind of accident with somebody, that's not enough insurance.
That's gone.
Okay. The woman who was in the car accident 2 days ago probably has gone through $150,000 of MRIs, CAT scans, operations, stitches. and the like in that period of time at Northwestern Hospital. So that will never, ever compensate anybody for any accident that's more than just literally a fender bender.
Right.
So my suggestion to you is you pay more, you get some insurance, and then you get an umbrella policy which covers you over and above what your car insurance. And again, I'm not going to purport to be an insurance expert,
right,
but you ask your insurance agent for that. And then the other thing that I really think people should look into is this uninsured and underinsured motorist insurance.
Right.
And that is mandatory in Illinois, which means this is for when you get in an accident with someone who might not have insurance,
mm-hmm,
or someone who's got really low insurance.
Yes.
And in this case, that would then pick up and pay for your own injuries,
right,
in the event that other person didn't have insurance or didn't have enough insurance. And you really couldn't have too much of that because, as you know, there are people out there driving around with no insurance.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, yeah.
No one knows if you have insurance. People let it lapse all the time. People,
right,
have substandard carriers. People get the minimum amount, and then you're stuck. Then you're stuck with, you know, hopefully you're insured. Hopefully you have good insurance. But what about your out-of-pocket losses for your job? What,
yeah,
about permanency? What about you can't perform your job anymore, maybe? Maybe now you're going to be on, you know, disability. So these are all things that you should think about and really talk to your insurance agent. And if you get your insurance online, that's fine, but you should still talk to somebody about,
yeah,
how do you insure yourself. For an extra few dollars a month, it's really worth it.
Well, because as you mentioned with your friend, and I'm sorry about that, the bills, you go in a hospital and bills rack up unbelievably. You can't imagine how fast the money gets charged up at the hospital.
It is insane. And you want to make sure you're getting all the care that you need. I know the two individuals who were in these accidents are going to have months, if not years, of physical therapy.
Yeah.
And insurance, even good insurance, doesn't cover all of that. Sometimes it's, you know, $50, $70, $80 a crack out of your pocket,
yeah,
for physical therapy. How are you going to pay for that? I mean, and most people can't afford that.
And a lot of people are probably right now saying, well, you know, insurance is very expensive and we have what we can afford. And that's, you know, and I mean, that's part of it. Insurance is a gamble anyway.
Put it this way. If you have a house, okay,
mm-hmm,
and you have your minimum insurance here, and you get in an accident, or your child gets in an accident, right?
Right?
You,
yep,
know, who's,
yep,
on your policy, you're bankrupt.
Yeah.
Because if the lawyer chooses to go after your personal assets because he can, you're bankrupt.
Yeah.
So if you want to lose everything, think about it that way. You know, maybe if you don't have anything to lose, you're going to be a little bit more careless when it comes to this. But
yeah,
I'm telling you, people save their money. People do things to put their college funds together. You know, this is part and parcel of good financial planning.
And or just take the bus.
Yeah.
Get rid of your car, take the bus. That's,
yeah,
why public transportation exists. 312-981-7200. Karen Conti is here. I know you have strong feelings about former Governor Blagojevich. The court upheld his 14-year sentence. At this point, I know he was wrong. Everybody knows what he did was wrong. It seems like, man, somebody's trying to prove a point at this juncture. Would you agree, disagree? What do you think of that?
He just doesn't have any good appeals. You,
yeah,
know, he had a full-blown trial. He had two full-blown trials. One was a hung jury for the most part. And so he got good representation. He had, you know, a judge who was very law enforcement oriented, and he had good lawyers on appeal. But, you know, undoing a jury trial after 6 months of testimony, it's just very difficult. Judges,
yeah,
are not going to overturn things like this. And, you know, I just don't think he's got many options left. You know, we thought maybe Blagojevich would give him a commutation of a sentence. That didn't happen. I don't see Donald Trump reaching out. So, so you know, he's in it for the long run, and it's just a sad thing. He's going to be an older man when he gets out.
Yeah, and listen, I think people should be punished for wrongdoings. There comes a point where you go, all right, this may be enough.
I agree with you, yeah, you know, for something like this. And when you see people who commit violent crimes who don't even serve half of that,
right,
you know, it's kind of like, where's the fairness in this? And again, if I thought this would deter one bad politician, I might say, all right, it's worth it to serve as that kind of example. But listen,
no, they're just trying to learn how to do it better.
It just keeps coming. And I don't know, it's a chicken or the egg. You know, are you bad when you go into office and that's the kind of person it attracts? Or do you get consumed with power and you do these bad things?
I think it might be the second. I think there's,
yeah,
a lot of people who go in with really good intentions, and then maybe they have some character flaws, but they're not going in to be crooked, but their character flaws get exploited by the system, and then they they take the wrong
path.
You
could be right. It could be a combination. But we've certainly seen our share here in Chicago, and I'm really kind of tired of it, actually.
Yeah, me too. I'd like this state to, you know, we got the lowest bond rating. We're in trouble. From the 708, is a privately written up promissory note enforceable in a court of law?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Two things about a promissory note. You can just go online and get a promissory note, and you can. It should say who the parties are, how much money was given on what day. It should provide for interest or no interest. Okay.
Oh, so that should be spelled
and
out.
And it should be spelled out when the payment is due. So okay. You can either say it starts on December 1st, 2017, or you can say upon demand. All but right. It should specify when the party who gave the money is entitled to ask for that back and what the terms are. And then you would have it signed and you'd keep a copy of it. And you know what, Brian, even without a promissory note, if I loaned you $200 tonight,
right.
And I just said, here, Brian.
Can you, by the way?
Yeah, no, I can. No, no. Well, you already reached in my purse.
Well,
so
sure.
I thought you were reaching for the guacamole.
I was. I'm like Oliver Twist. I can get in there and get out. All right, so you were going to loan me $200.
And you say, yeah, I'll pay it back to you, you know, starting in August 1st.
Right.
That's a binding agreement. It's oral.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't need to be in writing. If there's consideration right. for it, which means I gave it to you, you told me when you were going to be. Now we have an agreement. I turned it over to you. It's a binding contract. Does not have to be in writing, but it's so much better when it is in writing.
Yes,
so
everything's
much easier.
Better in writing,
yes.
Right?
So, and this is even, that goes for what a lot of people that call me from WGN, they say they co-signed a loan for their nephew or they did something like that. Mm. So, you know, those things you have to be really careful because they'll come right after you. They're not going after the kid. They're going after the person with money in the bank.
Somebody who has some cash.
So you got to really consider what you're going to do if that happens.
All right. Somebody couldn't hold on, and I don't know if you can answer this. It goes back to your insurance comments. Do you need uninsured motorist coverage if you have an umbrella policy?
Yes, you do. In Illinois, such insurance is mandatory.
Okay.
Not in all states. And I don't know how new that rule is. And again, I'm not an expert in this area, but I think you should consult a really good insurance
Perhaps somebody
broker.
At Allstate, as we sit here in the Allstate Showcase Studio.
That would be a great option.
That's right. You'd be right in good hands. They'd take care of you, right?
Yeah.
There.
I mean, you know, the umbrella helps out when you, for liability, mm-hmm. meaning if I hurt somebody, that will pay out to the person who is hurt. The uninsured helps you when you're in an accident with someone who has less insurance.
Right.
It's a different coverage. So the umbrella is not going to help you as much as
the uninsured over.
But again, there probably are provisions that I'm missing, and I'm probably talking generally right now, but certainly you sit down, you know, people just buy insurance and they don't read their policies and they don't understand what's covered.
They look at the deductible. What's my deductible?
And so what you really need to do is understand what's covered. You know, what goes covered in your house? Homeowners insurance covers all kinds of things you would never, you know, if you have a party and someone slips and falls, homeowners. If you have renter's insurance and, you know, you're out on your bicycle and you hurt someone, that could cover it. Could, maybe not, maybe. But you're always going to submit it. You know, if you have a claim or you have a problem, a legal issue, you're going to always submit it to your insurance carrier to see if they'll cover it.
Very nice. Karen Conti's here. Do you have a legal question? Of course you do. We all have legal questions. 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text number. We have about, we're going to have about 10 minutes left with Karen. So get your questions in as soon as possible. But people will wait, and then they'll say, perhaps tomorrow morning, I got to talk to Karen. How can they talk to you?
Call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, more with Karen on the other side, 312-981-7200. That's how you get your questions in at WGN. From the 815, does Karen Conti appear on the Steve Cochran Show anymore?
I do.
You're in town.
I do on Wednesdays. Usually it's about 6:40 till about 7. Now, occasionally, if there's a big news story, they might bump me to another day.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of don't know all the time exactly when that's going to be. Like, for instance, last week, I think I was on Thursday talking about the settlement with United. But normally it's 6:40. I try to post it on my Facebook. If anyone is a friend of mine on my Facebook, I try to post it, you know, when I know I'm going to be on.
Okay. But usually it's 6:40 on Wednesday morning.
That's right.
Very nice.
Thank you for asking.
Oh, sure. let's see. Hit and run by a stolen vehicle. Is the owner's insurance liable?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Somebody steals my car. The thief hits somebody, Am I liable for what that thief did with my car?
You know what? I don't know the answer to that because I'm not a personal injury lawyer, but I will find the answer to it. And I know that if there's negligent entrustment, meaning like if you left the keys in the car and someone stole it, you can be responsible because you had some culpability for not securing your car. And I've seen those cases, negligent entrustment, yes. Or negligent entrustment, like when one of maybe your kids takes the car and they're only 15 and they get in the car and they drive. And you, but you left the keys, you know, hanging on
the hook in the kitchen.
Hook in the kitchen where they all are.
Yeah,
and
where everybody's car keys are.
And so that they can get the insurance for that. My guess is that if the insurance does not cover it because it was not an insured under the policy and the person was not given permission. But if you email me with that question, I will get you a definitive answer.
All right. Because
I will either find out myself or I'll call one of my good friends who does personal injury and we can find the answer out.
What's that email address?
That's kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, from the 630, does income have any relationship to being able to get Social Security disability?
Yes, it does. There is a limit, and it varies from time to time, but it's somewhere in the area of $1,100. So if you make more than $1,100 per month, you are not going to be eligible for Social Security disability. And just know that doesn't cover interest in your income.
Okay.
So if you have investments or anything like that, it just means you can't be actively working. Also, your spouse's income doesn't count either. So if your spouse is a big shot and is earning you all kinds of money, like a radio show host, for instance, earning
speaking of the
big
Steve
bucks,
Cochran show.
You know, if you're not working, making $1,100 a month, you would be entitled to it.
All right. Very nice. John has been hanging on. He's in Palos Hills. Hi, John. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, Karen, Brian, good evening.
Hi, John.
Hi, Karen, got a question. My wife was at work one day and unfortunately got some information where a PACE paratransit bus allegedly backed up into her car, caused what we have got an estimate to about $1,600 in damage. There was a witness that was literally like 10 feet away. She actually had to step aside from, you know, when the vehicle came in, from what she said, gave her statement to the police. The police were really slow in acting on this, couldn't find, apparently these PACE paratransit vehicles are subcontracted out, to other businesses in the local suburban areas, and they couldn't even find out, like, who was driving, who owned these vehicles and stuff for a couple weeks. You know, they couldn't assign a ticket when it came time. They finally interviewed the driver that was, and the driver's information to the police officer was very consistent with what the witness said. Like the person made a wrong turn, backed up into a space, and then turned the opposite way down the street to go pick up a person that they turned down the wrong street, you know, the wrong direction, of which exactly what the witness said. But because there was no transference of or any damage on the PACE bumper of the bus, which the police officer didn't see until about a month later, finally, when they went to on the site of this PACE, you know, they couldn't assign a ticket.
Now, okay, well,
small claims, I'm assuming that's the only place I have recourse.
Yeah, I mean, have you written to the PACE and said, you know, this is what happened and here's a witness statement or this
I
is...
I called PACE and talked to risk management is who they gave me to. They said they don't basically have any culpability because they subcontract with this. I have to go after what's called MV Transportation, which is the South Suburban vendor that they contract with.
I don't know if that's the case or not, because if it says PACE on the bus, they're, you know, maybe they have to bring in the subcontractor, but they were holding themselves out to be a public entity. I could be wrong on this, but it seems to me that if they're not going to pay and you want to pursue this, you should file a claim in small claims court where the accident happened in that county, and you should name both of those organizations, and you're going to have to figure out where they are so that the sheriff can actually serve them, and then let them come into court and fight it out. And then you should make sure that you have the name of that witness so you can actually bring that person in to court to testify if necessary. Now, did your insurance pay the $1,600?
Actually, no, because I only have, liability. Yeah, because my wife's car is 13 years old and had high mileage, and we had just dropped it about a year ago, you know, thinking that there wasn't much value left to this vehicle. And her, you know, but
it's just a lot of work to get that money.
And she was in her parking lot at her school. You know, I didn't know do I need to have the witness in person, though, or is her statement on the police report good enough?
No, that's not enough. If you have to go to trial, you're going to have to subpoena that witness to bring that person to court to testify. Hopefully it'll settle, and hopefully they'll see that that witness statement is on the police report and will settle with you, probably not for all of it, but for some of it. But if it goes to trial, you will have to issue a subpoena and have that person come in. And listen, you know, that's a lot of work for a non-lawyer to do to get that $1,600, but if you feel strongly about it, go do it yourself.
All right. Good luck, John. Good luck. I hope it works out for you. And we've got just a couple minutes left. Kenny is in Hyde Park. Hi, Kenny.
Oh, how you doing? How you doing?
We're great. Doing well.
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Kenny.
Hi.
Okay, we got to go quick, Kenny. What's your question?
Oh, yeah, I just have a question. About a couple of years ago, I was at the Thompson Center. I made a phone call to a university to request transcripts while I was on the line. The University Police Department came on the line, intercepted the call, and said, you're not allowed to make calls to the university because you're banned. So we'll bring your transcripts to you at the Thompson Center. So I waited at the Thompson Center. The UIC, the police department came there, the campus police, and they arrested me and said, you violated the ban because you're not allowed to make phone calls to the university or use the internet access or to be on the campus. So I'm wondering, is that legal or is this illegal what happened to me at the Thompson Center?
Well, I think I'm going to need to know some more facts because it sounds like, I mean, did you have, and again, we don't have time to do this, so right. You might want to email me on this. It sounds to me like you had some issues with them before and they issued some sort of prohibition that you couldn't contact them and they were considering this to be a prohibition. Is that what happened?
They sent me an email, but then I contacted the FBI. They said, that's a restriction on your phone service. And they said, no, the U.S. Attorney's Office. So I contacted Durbin's office, Duckworth, and Mark Kirk's office, and people are scared. Nobody's getting back with me. People are acting very strange. They won't pick up the phone.
Well, I can't answer your question, Kenny, because there's a lot of pieces here. And listen, just my general advice to you is if people are telling you you can't make calls or you can't do something, you shouldn't do it, because they've got more power than you do, and I would have to sit down and figure out why they're doing this in the first place and whether or not they were legally entitled to do it.
Wow. All right. Well, Kenny, good luck. And, Karen, if Kenny wants to email you, how does he get a hold of you?
kconti@kcontilaw.com.
And for your phone number, because people will want to call now that they've heard you answer so many questions, they went, oh, I waited too long.
But please tell me what your issue is.
Yes.
Don't just call and leave me your name, because then I'm going to call back and have you. So give me all the information. It's a private line. That's 312-332-7800.
All right. And as far as you know, we'll hear you Wednesday morning on the Steve Cochran program.
That's
at 6:40.
That's right.
And are you in your jammies? Do you have coffee? Do you have some oatmeal?
You know what I do?
Fluffy slippers?
I get my workout stuff.
Ah.
I've got a Diet Mountain Dew. I know, that's terrible, isn't it?
That's how you start the day?
That's how I start
my
day.
That's how Debbie used to drink that by the
really
truckload.
Something addictive about it. And then after I'm done, I go running. So.
All right. Well, then you get your legal questions answered and go. You'll be back next week?
Yes, I will.
All right, we'll see
you then.
Unless you jet off. That's Karen Conti. We'll talk to her again next week. Let's do this. Then it's time to go. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. Thanks to Winston Mizzo, and thanks to the great folks from Broken English Taco Pub and to Karen Conti. We will be back again next Sunday night at 6, so why don't you join us? Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio, but nothing else because the machine is listening. The news is now. It's 9 o'clock. Here's Roger Badish.